This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. When writer Michael Crichton died of lymphoma in 2008, he left behind a legacy of larger-than-life science fiction novels. Some, like Jurassic Park, were made into popular films or the memorable television drama ER. He also left behind a number of works in various stages of completion. Richard Preston stepped in to finish one of those works, which is now on the bestsellers list as the novel Micro. Crichton's estate chose Preston, best known for The Hot Zone, a terrifying biography of the Ebola virus, as the right fit from Crichton's brand of meticulously researched science fiction that often questioned human hubris and technology gone wrong. Richard Preston joins us now to talk about Micro and the singular task of finishing a Michael Crichton novel. Richard, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Richard, how did you end up with this job? I didn't notice the posting on Craigslist.
I don't know if there was one. I got called by Michael Crichton's literary agent, and I ended up going into an office in New York where I was shown what he had left behind, which was about a third of Micro, and it was in pretty good shape. It was, for me, it was like looking at the pieces of a Swiss watch that was being built but hadn't been finished yet. And I could see a couple of things. I could see, first of all, that it was vintage Michael Crichton. It was really Michael Crichton at the showing the best of his talent. And secondly, that this was a man who, in some sense, was in a race with death. This was the last thing that he was working on just before he passed away. And I later learned that he had been going into the hospital to get chemotherapy and taking his laptop with him and working on Micro even while he was getting chemotherapy, which I think says something about his commitment to the story.
Yeah. How detailed were his notes for finishing it?
Well, I ended up seeing, I went out to California and I met with Michael's widow, Sherry Alexander Crichton, and she showed me these two little notebooks and some loose leaf sheets of paper from hotel stationery. And in it, you could see Michael Crichton's mind just bubbling over with ideas. You know, in real life, he was a very quiet, restrained man, and very private, almost secretive, but by all accounts, a very kindly, you know, sort of a generous but very quiet fellow. But in his notes and in his imaginative life, he just lived this incredibly wild existence. So I'm looking at these notes, and you could see, you know, he had a list of characters. He had determined the fates of some of the characters. But he hadn't really suggested a lot about exactly how they were going to die or what was going to happen to them and how they were going to fit into the parts of the Swiss watch. So it was a matter of detective work, of just trying to figure out just where his vision lay and how to try to make it real.
I'm trying to imagine that. I would think on the one hand it might be, well, of course, mysterious and interesting, but also liberating not to work under the weight of your own idea, but also daunting to finish a Michael Crichton text.
Yeah, that's a cool thought. I mean, it was wonderfully liberating. I didn't have to write like Richard Preston. All I had to do was write like Michael Crichton, and that was fun because he had the ball rolling already. And, you know, he had this just incredibly good high concept for Micro, this wonderful idea. I don't want to give things away, but I maybe should tell you just a bit about it.
Yeah, I'd love to know a little bit about it. I mean, the plot is I'm not making fun, but it's sort of like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but they're actually graduate students and many more fatalities, and it happens in Hawaii. Is there any plausibility at all to the possibility of shrinking people?
Well, I think, you know, Michael Crichton and his high concept sometimes depended on as yet unknown physics. But, of course, we don't know very much about the universe, and there are many, many mysteries in physics. So I don't think we can rule out the possibility that objects, including human beings, could be shrunk down in a giant machine, which is what happens in Micro. And then these seven graduate students, who are all kind of geeky biologists, are left abandoned in the Hawaiian rainforest, and they're having to deal with the reality of what scientists call the micro world. This is the world of micro monsters and micro creatures, and everything from ants to other creatures. I don't really want to talk too specifically about them, but it's all real. And, you know, Michael had this great insight into nature that we human beings are on the very large end of the scale of size. On the scale of nature, we're nearly as large as blue whales or redwood trees. We're really enormous. And almost everything that lives is a whole lot smaller than we are. And when you get down into the micro world, you find a world of just dramatic beauty and unbelievably terrifying predators. Predators that have strategies that you wouldn't see in the Serengeti. Beetles can become these armored creatures that are equipped with chemical weapons. Or just to give another example, a spider, a hunting spider, which is a big spider. It doesn't weave a web. It runs around on the ground looking for prey. These spiders have incredibly fine hearing. A spider has about 80 ears on its body for detecting sound, in addition to the fact that the spider's fur can also detect sound. And so a spider has a capability, like a bat, of developing a perfect three-dimensional image of the world around it using sound alone. And so this, of course, can play into a good Michael Crichton plot.
I'm speaking with Richard Preston, author of The Hot Zone and other books. He completed Michael Crichton's unfinished novel, Micro, which is now on the bestsellers list. Richard, you just hit on two things that I just loved about this book, that they're not science fiction-created monsters. There's a kind of reverse science fiction in that these monsters are of the natural world, this kind of terror near the bottom of the food chain, but also that these grad students were specialists in ethnobotany, arachnology, and the like, greatly suited to be heroes in the miniature jungle of Hawaii.
Yeah, they may be sort of lab rats, but on the other hand, when they're thrown into the super jungle of the micro world, they find that they have to fall back on their existing knowledge. And it turns out that they really do know a lot about the micro world. And so they're able to develop special weapons and tools. I don't want to give too much away. And they also discover that the physics of the micro world is different for human beings. When you're very small, I went through, Isaac Newton's equations for kinetic energy, for example. And it turns out that if you fall from a long distance, nothing happens. You just hit the ground and you're fine. You're also much stronger relative to your size than you are when you're big. So, and you can run faster. You're able to do things that you couldn't possibly do as a big person. And so they find that in a weird way, they've been equipped with new superpowers so that they can contend on an even ground with some of these horrendous monsters.
Well, I'm thinking back to Gulliver's Travels, of course, Alice in Wonderland, maybe dating myself with The Fantastic Voyage, The Incredible Shrinking Woman. What is this human fascination with being miniaturized, do you think?
That's a great question. There's something absolutely magnificent about the world of the very small. And I think as children, we love to imagine ourselves, what would it really be like if I was really, really small? And indeed, when you're a child, you are small. You're smaller in relation to everything around you. So as part of the research, for example, I went to Hawaii and I went to this rainforest valley, which is real. It's
the
a real place described. Yeah, it's the Manoa Valley just outside Honolulu, and it's filled with just spectacularly interesting and beautiful jungle. And I brought with me a little magnifying glass. It's called a hand lens. It's powerful. It's used by biologists to study very small objects in the field, like, the parts of a flower. And I just lay down on my stomach in the rainforest and looked around through my magnifying glass, and I saw a world of wonder. I mean, it's like looking into a miniature Serengeti. There are these predators, they're prey, there's all this complex life happening. And then to try to imagine a story where humans are thrown into that world and have to somehow survive. It's a dangerous Eden.
Although a very good assignment from the sounds of it.
Oh, yeah, research in Hawaii, really tough.
Well, we did read a review of Micro that used the term, honey, I shrunk Jurassic Park. Now, despite this change of scale, you can't really imagine scenes being directed by Steven Spielberg. Do you think that Michael started on the book with a movie in mind?
I am certain of it. He never said so in his notes, but he had an incredibly visual imagination. Joseph Conrad, the author, once said that all writing is primarily visual. I'm not sure I always agree with that, but it's certainly true in the case of Michael Crichton. He was imagining scenes, and there are, I mean, it is, it's great. It's the kind of thing that Hollywood, I think, loves to get its teeth into.
Crichton novels do have this way of making us interested in science, but also warning us about its misuse, you know, the questionable motives, the mad scientist figure like Vin Drake in this book, on a kind of blind drive for what they think is progress. Do you think he was secretly a skeptic, Michael Crichton?
I think Michael Crichton had no illusions about the human heart. I think he understood that nature in itself is not evil. But when human beings evoke the powers of nature because of our own divided nature, the darkness and the brightness, the capacity for horror that seems to exist in the human species itself, he could see only too clearly that when you mix that in with super high technology, you can have really great possibilities for drama and for storytelling. I mean, he was above all, you know, a teller of yarns. And I, without giving too much away, I should mention that that micro-weapons make an appearance in Micro, very important appearance. Micro-weapons are miniaturized weapons that can do really scary things. And the thing is that micro-weapons are becoming real now as we speak. And micro-weapons are going to change the world. The powers of miniaturization that we've evoked through our technology are really leading to new kinds of powers. And anytime there's a huge advance in technology, in human history, there's always been a corresponding advance in the power of weapons. Mm.
This will be Crichton's second posthumous success. Do you think there are any other hidden half-finished projects that have yet to see the light of day?
Yes, there are. The Crichton family is being very quiet about this, and I don't have any specific information. Micro was his last novel in the sense that it was what he was working on when he passed away, and it was what he had clearly in his sights, you know, trying to finish. But like many novelists, he left other things around. He had things in shoeboxes. Just for example, the phenomenally successful television series ER originated with Michael Crichton. Mm-hmm. In some notes in a shoebox that he wrote up when he was in medical school.
Richard Preston, I want to thank you so much for giving us a little peek into that, and congratulations on your book.
Thanks, Virginia.
Richard Preston is the author of The Hot Zone and The Wild Trees. Now he's the only person other than Michael Crichton to have officially written a Michael Crichton novel. You'll find links to the book and reviews at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And we're going to leave you with some of the iconic sounds from the film Jurassic Park. So see if you can use your imagination just a little bit. Instead of a velociraptor, picture a beetle the size of an elephant. Maybe you can close your eyes. Coming up, Ragtime Revolution. A young pianist puts a new spin on the old school style. That's when Word of Mouth returns on NHPR.